This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. District Attorney Hiller Moore is in the house, and if you have a comment that you'd like to send online, we welcome those as well, talk@talklouisiana.org. And we have some ground to cover with Hiller Moore, and when he comes in, as he does a few times a year, we get an update on the murder count, and this has been a particularly rough year for carnage in the streets in our community and in many across the country. But as we have noted on this show, Louisiana as a state has had the highest murder rate for 32 consecutive years, and it's primarily because of the large urban areas. And this has been under various district attorneys, various mayors, various governors. It's a problem we just can't shake. And in Baton Rouge right now, what's the count, Hiller Moore?
Unfortunately, we're at 125 uniform crime report homicides. That's a big number. Last year was our biggest number ever, and it was 114 or 117, so still have 2 months left.
And we're already ahead of the worst year ever, which was last year.
Yes.
And COVID is considered to be a culprit, but when I look at your stats, I think almost 39,
of the 125, what's really telltale, 33 are actually what we consider domestic violence and or intimate partner related. And of those 33s, it may be a little misleading on the numbers of that. Several will also be included as justifiable homicides, which is not in that 125. That is, but in this case, women defending themselves against an attacker have killed that person. So we just keep a count of that. And at the beginning of the year, I think we had 3 or 4, like in January, February, and we're up to maybe 5 or 6 so far this year.
Of justifiable.
Yes, sir. Yes. Meaning that they were being attacked and that we thought that legally they were justified in taking that action.
Yeah. But how does that compare with last year?
It's a little higher than last year. Obviously, when the number goes up, that number will go up as well. But at least in those cases, those people were protected and protecting themselves, and because surely they could have been a victim on the other side.
125 total, and 33 of those involving domestic incidents. And these are, I guess, of those that are classified as homicides, these are all men who killed women?
Yeah, we may have had one woman kill a man. I'm not sure about that number, but yes, overwhelmingly men and female.
And overwhelmingly, when we talk about any homicide, it's men who are usually doing the killing.
Absolutely. And so that number now, also, we're talking about homicides, but when you talk about regular crime in general, right now, I can't tell you the actual number, but 25% of our caseload is domestic violence related. That's a huge number.
And that's up.
That's up, but it's been consistent that that's the percentage. But domestic violence homicides are up this year, and so those cases are as well, and again, related to COVID.
Well, and COVID has caused all kinds of problems, and people take those problems home. Sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's stress. It's job-related. Are there any number of things that cause people to act in ways that they might not otherwise?
I think all of it together, but then I think you add on to that mental health, drugs and alcohol, kids and family stress, not being able to leave the home. All of those things add up, and I think for the most part on domestic violence, that's why you see it. Whether that explains the larger number of homicides, I think there's more to it than that, but that surely is part of it.
280 deaths this year, I think, from opioids in Baton Rouge. Now, you would imagine that would be a bigger story because this one is not isolated in certain parts of town. It's not isolated to any particular demographic group. No. But 280, more than double the number of murders.
Absolutely.
And that is an alarming trend in the wrong direction.
It is, and it's been continuing that way for a long time. I remember when we were alarmed, and I'm talking I think Mike Edmondson was his colonel then, and Dr. Clark, our coroner, we were alarmed when we had 12 to 24 heroin-related overdoses. Now we've moved into opioids, fentanyl, heroin. Everything has fentanyl in it now. And that's what the scary part is. A lot of our overdoses we're seeing lately are those that people that are recreational marijuana and maybe cocaine users, and not expecting or wanting to get fentanyl, but they're getting fentanyl whether they want it or not or ask for it, and they're not used to it.
And it's deadly.
It's deadly.
These are people not trying to kill themselves.
Absolutely.
It's an accident.
And
it's,
absolutely.
And in some cases, I'm told by people in the know that some of these people, they get off opioids, and then they'll have a relapse, and their body's not ready for it, and they don't make it.
And we have a grant to study that, and we have found that to be true. And what we found that is that people that are getting out of prison, they've been in prison for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they made bond, they were heavy users. When they get out, they're looking for that same dosage, and they're not used to it, and then they die. But that's been a big number. The other is those who are in halfway houses who are, you know, at risk, and they're not using it. And all of a sudden, something happens to them, and they use again, and they're not used to it, and they're dead at a halfway house where hopefully they will get in services.
877-217-5757 for Hiller Moore, and talk at talklouisiana.org. And Hiller is the DA, as you can imagine, has some challenges talking about current cases, but I've already got a question about NBA Youngboy. He's now in Utah, isn't he?
From what I understand, yes, that's what I've read. That's a federal case that's ongoing now. We have had our share of cases, obviously, with him. We're finished in the state system with him, and now he's facing some federal charges. And my understanding is the judge just recently released him to as conditions of bond to go there.
Very talented man and popular, but
violence and the things they talk about, rap about, sing about, or about violent things that have happened maybe in the past, or they are calling people out. And it just seems to have progressed over the years to where you have to be that type of personality, or at least think you are, show you are, to be successful. And it's a shame because these people can, as you know, attract a lot of folks. And they can really do good for young people, and it seems that it's maybe going the other way.
877-217-5757. Bunny in South Baton Rouge. Hi, Bunny. You're on with Hiller Moore. Good morning.
Good morning. I don't partake in any recreational drugs, and I'm actually allergic to fentanyl. So I'm wondering how many of these fentanyl-related deaths are because they are actually allergic to it.
That's a good point, Bonnie. I don't know that answer, but if you could give your number, I would like to get that answer to you.
Okay. We're getting her number right now.
And I will call Bonnie later today.
But Bonnie, thank you for calling. The coroner has been out in front on this issue. It's not like he's dragging his feet.
No.
He's been right out there with use, and he's been talking about this for years.
Look, and he's him and his staff, they do a great job at the scenes of these overdoses, and they collect the data in the toxicology, mm-hmm. and they can see that from what they do and what we see there's some really bad, strong batches that go out, and you'll see groups of people dying probably from getting the same drug from, we would assume, the same person.
Okay. Now, a listener notes, this is Tom on Bluebonnet, that you have said on this show, and I know you don't do this as a badge of honor. It's just you consider it part of the job. When you're in town at any time, day or night, you go to murder scenes. Do you also go to these opioid deaths?
It depends on, if I get the call soon enough, if the body is still there. But as you can imagine now, with 125 homicides and 280 overdose deaths, depending on where they die and how quickly the body is, it just depends.
877-217-5757. Bill Huey says, to my knowledge, COVID never shot anyone. What is the city doing to get guns off the streets and out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them?
Good point. And, the different topic, but on COVID, I think that the numbers of overdose deaths and murders top COVID deaths. And I think that's another big number that we kind of overlook. And I'm not sure of actually what the COVID number is. But I think, to his point, more should be done about overdose deaths and violent crime and guns. And so, look, the Baton Rouge Police and the Sheriff, they work hard on getting guns off the street. There's probably more than 2,000 guns that are taken off the street every year. What we're finding, though, and I think you and I have talked about this before, the guns are not being bought at a store and being used on the street. We've had a really big increase of gun sales. The guns we see that are used are generally stolen out of your house and my house and my car. Mm-hmm. And we have to really stop that. If we could lock up your gun, you could save a life, honestly. And so, but we are working hard on guns. We look at guns. We have around 2,000 gun cases a year. And it's important to try to work on those.
It's amazing. We did have some interesting election results this week. And crime, considering where it is, was not the big issue. But I think that's going to change.
Look, I think, you know, the pendulum, the criminal justice pendulum, it never stays in the middle. It swings one way or the other. It appears to be now, when it was defund the police, it's now refund the police. And it looks like it's coming back the other way because of crime.
And, of course, an effort in Minnesota, Minneapolis, yes, where George Floyd was killed, was unsuccessful to defund the police. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. And talk at talklouisiana.org. And Hiller Moore is our DA, and he's kind of like Mark Ballard on Thursdays. He'll take any question, and so it doesn't necessarily have to be about drugs or homicides. But here's one. Jeff on Corsi wants to know your thoughts about televised trials. We have a trial going on in St. Tammany Parish now against the former sheriff, Jack Strain, which would be ripe for this kind of thing. But are you an advocate or an opponent?
I'm kind of maybe in the middle, but really not an advocate. I really thought a lot about it, but we have enough issues in court right now with people taking cell phones in and then taking pictures or video and people testifying and then blasting it out on social media to show that they're a rat, and then from that leads to another shooting
so
retaliation.
You're saying it could be dangerous
in those
for
cases?
People.
Yes, maybe in the Strain case, we're not talking about that type of behavior, but in a regular type of case or a hearing. Yeah, sure.
And it's hard enough to get people to come forward anyway, isn't it?
We hardly get anyone to come forward. And, you know, with the murder number and COVID, a lot of stuff when COVID, when people are inside, there was a lot more social media going on, and people were calling each other out in social media. And now once things open up, they're back on the street. And then once they face each other, when they've called each other out, it's time to put up a shut up for them, unfortunately. And I think it results in the numbers that we have.
Mm-hmm. Here's Lee listening in Charleston, South Carolina. I think this is a guy I know. He asks about the death penalty.
Yeah.
Are you an advocate?
Yes. However, the death penalty, in my opinion, is on life support. And I don't think the death penalty will be around much longer. I think there are cases that clearly death penalty is warranted because the facts and the behavior is so egregious that that is an appropriate alternative for a jury. But that has to be a jury decision, a community decision, not a DA decision. The DA only makes the decision to present it to a jury.
Right.
And a jury unanimously has to say guilt, and then death is the only appropriate answer. And
some of these cases you've been involved with, and I'm immediately getting some emails, and one of them regards the calendar shooting. I think that was 30 years ago.
Yes,
now.
And it's
25 years ago, 96, I believe.
Yes, I think that was now converted to a life sentence. I don't think that that's still a death sentence, but yes, that's a...
There's an example of a guy who we know who did it, and it was a cold blood, two murders, right?
Yes.
Two of them.
And that the father, I know I'm very familiar with one of the victims and their parents, and they have still struggled. And it's fresh every day to these people. And they're still struggling with that case.
Well, I for years was against the death penalty, but when I saw the torture that Lynn Marino went through, and the fact that Derek Todd Lee ended up outliving her, I think based on what happened to her daughter and many others, and slam dunk DNA evidence, no doubt he did it. He probably, in just one person's point of view, should have died for that crime. Those crimes.
And so I don't disagree on that. But for the families, it's hard to explain, and maybe people listening, that you're making a decision that, yes, you would like to go forward on a death penalty, and it's appropriate. We think that it is the right thing to do. But we have to understand, as a victim's family, you're putting yourself through 25 years in Louisiana of agony and 500 different court appearances and writs and to the United States Supreme Court. Every federal court.
Have to relive it over and over.
And so now it's a generational thing. Mm-hmm. And to just think about every Christmas, you're already going to miss that person. Now you're wondering what's going to happen on this appeal. For 25 years, that's what our track record is now. And so it's unfair to the victim's family if they have it going this long. Either we're going to have it or we're not, and make it just, and swift is not the right word. But, you know, Texas, I think, has 10 years. 25 years to me is outrageous.
Daniel in South Baton Rouge. Daniel, you're on with Hiller Moore. Good morning to you, sir.
Yeah, I'm calling about the term defund the police.
Yeah.
Does it really mean taking money from the police? And what's your thought on that?
Yeah, good, very good question. So it depends, I guess, on the jurisdiction you're in. But most of the ones that are really are the ones that I would respect are the ones that say, look, we as people and as a legislature, we put so much on the police that really should not be a police function, like a lot of mental health issues, other things that police have to get in by law, by statute. Can't someone else who's trained in mental health do that job and not the police? Let's not make the police or have the police do a job that they're not trained for. Let's move that money to a different organization, not necessarily cut the police, but let's make sure that the right people are handling the right problem.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Hiller Moore. Good morning to you, sir.
I just read an article. A mentally challenged person went to Singapore with an ounce and a half of heroin. They're going to hang him. You know, in Germany, to get a gun license, you have to have a psychiatric exam. In Israel, to get a gun license, you have to be at least 28 or a military veteran. In Switzerland, if you want heroin, you could register as a drug addict and get a prescription. I think the same policy in England applies to cocaine. Now, you know, we need to learn from these other countries. We either need to get tough with drugs, which is a major cause of the crime, or we need to really decriminalize drugs because I had two friends in New Orleans killed by crackheads. There will always be people willing to commit violence for these horrid drugs, and we need to change course.
Thank you, David.
I think he makes some really valuable points, and a lot of folks have that same opinion. Either you legalize it all and get people help and have them use it in certain spots where we know everyone's going to be safe or not. And so surely drugs and drug dealing is violent behavior because it involves guns and involves groups and gangs, and it leads to people being killed.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Another listener asks about this story that was front page yesterday, body donated to science, ends up in public dissection. This is a 98-year-old World War II veteran who is doing another patriotic contribution to society by giving his body to science, and then he ends up on public display. Are there any, the listener asks, are there any laws that would apply to this as far as prosecution?
Look, I'm going to bite my tongue a lot right now, but this story, when I saw it, just really hit me cold. And I've drafted a letter to the editor, and I just hope that everyone supports the letter. Can you imagine? This is a man who is, I think he's 92 or 98. Forget
98.
98. I spoke with his wife yesterday. I spoke to the district attorneys in Las Vegas and in Oregon. Spoke to a family member. Can you imagine that you are 18, 19, you're in World War II, you're landing overseas, you're giving up your potential life and your physical body for the country. And this guy was a patriot. He entered the Merchant Marines, later got drafted by the Army, went back and served again in Korea. And for his wife to donate the body to science, he always wanted to give his body back to the country. He wanted things for the country. He's a true patriot. And thinking that his body is going to be used by professionals to advance science, only for his body to be sold to another company and his body then to be moved to a public display in a hotel room where a doctor does an autopsy on him and allows people to put gloves on and feel his body parts in the name of science or education. That body that he sacrificed for our country is on display. It's immoral. It's unethical. It is probably not illegal in Louisiana for the actions here. And I don't know that there's a law that covers it in the other two states, but I have reached out to both DAs where it's speaking with them. There's an investigative report. If you get a chance to look at that video that this investigative report did in Portland, I believe, it will shock you.
Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on the air with Hiller Moore. Good morning, sir.
Thank you. Jim Hiller in the audience. Jim. Good morning. Mr. Moore, what are district attorneys across the nation doing to promote the vigorous prosecution of these monsters that are brutalizing citizens under the guise of police as DAs prosecute citizens who would do the same thing?
Yeah, so are you talking about police that are arrested and charged with crimes?
Yes.
Yes, and they seemingly take so long to before their situation is thrust to the forefront.
So, first, for prosecutors, DAs to be involved in case someone an arrest is typically made. And I, as you know, I'm sure there are very few arrests of officers for violence. And those that are arrested, we take those cases just like you would any other case. And the same difficulties that we have with prosecuting a regular case are the same with police officer cases. So they're really no different than others. But first, it has to start with a thorough investigation and an arrest.
877-217-5757. We'll spend a few more minutes with District Attorney Hiller Moore. So there is still time to get in. And, of course, we live in a violent community. We'll talk more. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Hiller Moore with us for a few more minutes. District Attorney, East Baton Rouge Parish, grew up in the great city of New Orleans. Graduate of Brother Martin High School, but came to Baton Rouge and got into the culture here. He is a man about town. Gardner, one of the top gardeners in the world, and at one time one of the top rugby players.
I wouldn't say that. We just had our 50th LSU rugby reunion. Got to see a lot of really old, good friends. So it was good to see. But and now it's almost my 50th high school reunion for Brother Martin next year.
How about so that?
Getting up there.
It is hard to believe. You got a birthday coming next month, right?
Yes. Don't want to mention that. I have a shoulder surgery, too, coming up. So it's
really
close to the birthday.
You were born in 54. 54. So do the math.
Yeah.
I can do it.
67.
67, yeah. But he looks great and stays active, and that's a big part of it. You've been vaccinated, right?
Yep.
And one of our dear friends, Sam at Thai Kitchen, he almost lost his life. And I don't think he would mind just me talking about it, that I think he regrets not being vaccinated, but thank God he's recovered.
Boy, you talk about a good man, just a guy that's a heart and soul and a great American coming here from Thailand and just his whole entire family. Just glad to see him doing really well because I saw him when he was not.
He is a fine man and a testament to our community. 877-217-5757 in our remaining moments with Hiller Moore. Joe in Mid-City. Joe, you're on with the DA. Hi, Joe. Good morning, Joe. All right, Londra, can you see if we can make contact with Joe? And I do have some inquiries online, and one was regarding our discussion pertaining to the death penalty, and you had indicated it's on life support. Why?
Yes.
Why?
Well, we haven't had a death penalty actually carried out in
Louisiana
years.
Long,
in years.
Over 10 years, right?
Yes, and it's probably more than that. It's just, I mean, that's it's a amount of years. It's 25 years to even get to that point, even before you even have someone put to death, and it's just not happening. And I think the appetite for the country, it's so expensive, it just seems that it's going that way.
Well, and the drugs that are used are hard to get, right?
Yes, pretty much a moratorium. In other countries, they're not making them, not sending them. So again, it just adds to the frustration of a family that believes that that is the only just verdict that the jury gave and judge approved, and all the courts have approved, and now it's not happening.
Well, David Treen, our former governor, who was a great man, he and not a bomb thrower at all, but he in his latter years said he thought we should bring back the electric chair and bring it town to town. I'm serious. This is David Treen, and have public viewings, and that would be a deterrent. Is there another way to take care of these? We're talking about people who have taken a life, like firing squad, electric chair. Is there anything in lieu of drugs?
Man, that's a legislative problem and fix, and that they're going to have to decide that. I don't see that ever happening here. I think it's we are what we are.
Well, I saw an electrocution, and I think you can make a case that that's cruel and unusual punishment. It's a brutal way to take a life, and
especially if it doesn't work.
Sometimes it doesn't. Yeah,
yes.
Gas chambers have not worked either.
Same thing.
Yes. But firing squad generally works.
Generally,
and it's a quick exit too. So and I think, does Utah still do that?
I think they do.
Gary Gilmore, the most notable one. I think Alondra has massaged the phone lines, and we have Joe in Mid-City who we couldn't make contact with a moment ago. Joe, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Inkster and attorney.
Hey, Joe.
A little while ago, you brought up Derek Todd Lee's name, and I was sad to hear that, because there's a guy sitting in Angola right now that killed 10 women. The last one he killed was a white female, I believe, and y'all went right to his house and got him. the minute he killed one white woman, but the other nine were black women. Would you speak to that?
I think you're talking about Sean Gillis. I think that's, is that who you're speaking of, Joe? Okay, he's gone. I think Sean, yeah.
I was not the district attorney.
You're not the district attorney then, but yeah. But Derek Todd Lee had killed one black victim, Danae Colombe. Race has nothing to do with this, and a serial killer is a serial killer, and if there is irrefutable DNA evidence, as there was in the Lee case, obviously it was a burden to the state of Louisiana to keep him alive. In fact, he had pacemakers installed to keep him alive while he was on death row.
And he was before my time as well, so I'm not really sure of either one of those two.
And one of my friends, Dan Coutrier in Dallas, who's a lawyer and against the death penalty, he says the great irony is that when they have these botched executions, they rush the guy to the hospital to revive him.
Sure is.
Which is totally bizarre, but that's the way it works.
It would be cruel otherwise.
Alondra, do we have time to get one more caller in for... Hill or Moore, 877-217-5757 if you would like to get in under the wire. And it is Steve in Denham Springs. Steve, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Steve.
Steve? Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how y'all doing, gentlemen?
Hey, Steve.
I just wanted to say, hey, Hiller, I think you know who I am, knowing your family. Just want to tell you what a great job that you do, and I appreciate you, and my two cents worth, we need to pay police better, and we need to fund mental health a little bit better. This Bridge Center is a start, but it's not the answer, and I'll just hang up and let you soak in the compliments.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. So obviously, I have a lot of really good people that that I work with, and my hat's off to them and all the other agencies that I work with. That's why it goes so well. But yeah, mental health is a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
The Bridge Center is a very good start for Baton Rouge, and we need more. But mental health has really exposed itself even more things through COVID. And so it's a really big learning curve for us. But I'm glad we had the Bridge Center set up before COVID came. We opened up right at the time we were shutting down. But we need more places like that.
And Holly in the Garden District wants to give you credit for being in somewhat ways very responsible for STAR. The sexual trauma and awareness.
Tell her thank you.
Well, you were on the ground floor there, weren't you?
Yeah, well, STAR started out of the district attorney's office, and we learned very well that the ladies now who run STAR, they're very, very good. They're very talented, very aggressive in what they do, and the need is there. And they actually were working for the DA's office in the so-called rape crisis center, and then they started STAR. That thing has exploded to a metropolitan approach here in New Orleans and elsewhere.
Let's get one more caller in, Alondra, for Hill or Moore, and then we'll go to Glenn Gilbo on deck to talk LSU sports. Jason in the Garden District. Hi, Jason. You're on with D.A. Moore.
Morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Jason.
Yes, sir.
My question is, do we have a statistic on the racial and geographical inflated homicide number?
As far as victims?
As far as
perpetrators,
black on black,
perpetrators.
You know, if you give me a number, I do have the actual specific number count, but obviously, you know, the overwhelming is African American on African American on those categories. But I can if you give me the number, I will actually give you the person number.
But I'm guessing, and that's a dangerous thing to do, but you can answer, I think, of the 33 that are classified as domestic violence, I would suspect that's more of a cross-section of the community.
It's more of a cross-section of the community, correct, than the regular homicide number. You're absolutely correct.
Well, Hill or Moore, thanks for your service.
Thanks
Let's
for being
do
here.
It again, and hopefully the next 7 weeks of the year will not be as deadly as the first 45 have
That's
been.
Our hope.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate your service. Glenn Gilbo is with us. He is a veteran LSU beat writer and recently switched his main gig to Outkick the Coverage from Gannett, where he worked for many years. And he continues to be a featured columnist in Tiger Rag. And he was one of those guys who actually got along well with Nick Saban before Nick Saban became Nick Saban. And tomorrow, Alabama, led by the former LSU coach, is reigning as a 4-touchdown favorite over Coach O, who is a lame duck. Glenn, your thoughts first about the game in Tuscaloosa tomorrow night.
Good morning, Jim. It looks bad. It looks like it could be scary, kind of like last year's game. LSU's really beat up and injured, it's got to be weird for players going into a game like this when, you know, they know their coach isn't coming back. So it's probably not going to be a great game for LSU, I fear.
You fear. A listener notes that one Hudson Curley Haldeman once brought a team into Tuscaloosa, and LSU beat Alabama, which had not lost in almost 2 years. So this guy, who is it, Lalandra? It's Howland Monroe. He says he's expecting history to repeat tomorrow. Is Hal taking some hallucinogens? What do you think?
Yeah, I was covering Alabama at that time for the Mobile paper, and that was a shocking upset. That's one of the biggest upsets they've had until ULM beat Nick Saban in 2007. But that was a little different, you know. Curley was not getting fired that season, and Alabama did not score a lot of points that year, even when they went undefeated the year before. And it happened. Things are easier to happen like that when teams just kind of focused on defense. So that's not what Alabama does anymore. And this is Nick Saban. He's not going to let something like that happen.
Probably not. And of course, Nick Saban is 70 years old now. This will be his first game after his 70th birthday. Coach O is 60, and it looks like Saban has a decade or so left, and Coach O will probably have difficulty getting another head coaching job of this kind of caliber. He's a lame duck. Did you find it surprising that he decided to stay for the season?
Well, you know, of the lame duck coaching situations, I mean, this is one where, I mean, Coach O, he's from Louisiana. He still cares about LSU. So he's one of the few, I think, that can do that. You know, the TCU coach just had that opportunity, and he said, no, see ya. I think nowadays most people just say, see ya.
Well, we'll return and spend a bit more time with Glenn Gilbo about the LSU coaching search after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Darlene Rowland, 25th anniversary of the Fred Stick Farmers Market, as in tomorrow. But we're talking for a few minutes with Glenn Gilbo, who's an LSU beat writer, who's been around for just about as long as anybody covering the beat. And LSU's a place that's always rife with controversy, and the Coach O firing was portrayed as a firing because he's 9-9 since going 40-9 in his first 49 games and leaving the floor of the Superdome 22 months ago as the champions of the world. But Glenn, you say it's a much deeper story. I think you have even said that this was all but hush money provided to Coach O with the $17 million in walking away money. Why?
Well, because I think LSU fears what Coach O knows, may know, and may say to, you know, attorneys, depositions with Title IX lawsuits or to NCAA officials concerning the football investigation. I was told that they did not want Coach O to leave unhappy. They wanted to make sure he was all right. I think that's a lot of money to do that. I think they made a mistake. I think they could have finessed that $17 million buyout down because of the reasons that you could have fired or possibly could have fired Coach Orgeron with cause.
And there's a story today of another assistant of Coach O who was fired by Orgeron for cause for violating NCAA rules. And so he was an advocate of firing this guy for cause. But, of course, the first thing he said when he got canned was, I made sure I got my money. So he got lots of money.
Right. And compared to what, Will Wade is accused of. James Craig was fired for, you know, improper contact with one recruit as opposed to at least a dozen or more concerning Will Wade. I think that was extremely unfair, the way LSU treated James Craig. He should not have been fired with cause. He should have had a better settlement. And frankly, I think they should have kept him because the offensive line was horrible. You can't change coaches in June. That was one thing that really hurt the team this season. That was a great coach. And, you know, as usual with LSU, you know, we don't know quite the whole story behind all that.
Nope. Well, who's the next coach?
Well, you know, I'm not sure who the next coach is going to be. I don't think anybody is. This is one of the quieter searches. You know, Scott Woodward is pretty good at this, and he's better at keeping things quiet on this search than he was with the baseball search. You know, I think there's some great possibilities out there. Lincoln Riley, I like Lane Kiffin, though I don't think Scott Woodward does. Luke Fickell would be a great coaching hire. The Cincinnati coach Mario Cristobal at Oregon would be excellent too. I think Woodward's going to find a great coach. I really do.
Well, Glenn Gilbo, we'll keep it up to date with you, and thanks for joining us today. Appreciate you.
Okay, thank you.
And we're joined in studio by Darlene Rowland, who is the chieftain of the Red Stick Farmers Market, and tomorrow from 8 to noon, Main Street, 510 Main Street. It'll be a 25th anniversary celebration. The inaugural Red Stick Farmers Market was held November 2nd, 1996. And Darlene, I doubt that you were there then.
I was not there. Although, you know.
Where were you in 1996?
I was just starting LSU. I was a freshman at LSU. So I did actually shop at the first location, which was on North Boulevard. So the market did move around 2002 when Main Street Market opened. So we also have our 19 mm-hmm. years at Main Street Market celebration this week.
Well, I hear there will actually even be alcohol involved tomorrow to celebrate.
There will be. We're pulling out all the stops, and we have City Hospitality Group is going to be there, and they have Satsuma Mimosas, Bloody Marys, and a Persimmon Smash. Uh-huh. So very fresh and local cocktails.
A Persimmon Smash. You can actually get smashed before the Alabama game, which is expected to be a debacle. But this has become one of the great treasures of Baton Rouge. The market's grown to include more than 50 member farmers, fishers, ranchers, food artisans who create a gathering place for the community each week. And it's gotten bigger and better through the years, hasn't it?
It has. And, you know, there's so many great success stories that have come out of the market. You know, for example, a lot of people know Hanley salad dressings, and they're now in Costco and all over the nation in Walmart's, and they sold their first bottle of salad dressing inside Main Street Market.
Hanley?
So Hanley's Foods. You know, there's a lot of great success stories like that. So people don't realize really what an incredible incubator it's been for economic development for food businesses in Baton Rouge.
Will there be music to go with the fruits and vegetables and liquid libations?
Of course. We'll have John Gray and his jazz band there, which are always fun and lively. And like you said, we'll have the libations. We'll have some fun stuff for kids. And then we're going to have a visit from the Commissioner of Agriculture and Forestry, Mike Strain. He'll be there at 9:30 to give some remarks. So it should really be a great day. And it looks like even good weather.
That's always a help. And when it rains, what do you do?
Absolutely. So we are rain or shine. So if it rains, we just go right inside the attached Galvez garage there and set up. So that makes it nice that we do have a rainy day location. It's pretty unique for farmers markets across the country. But my friend Jay Grimes has reported that it looks like we'll have some sunshine. It'll be a little cool, but it'll warm up, and we're excited.
Well, if Jay Grimes says it, I'm sure there'll be a whole fat gang of sunshine tomorrow. The anniversary marks the official start of the Louisiana fall harvest. Now, that was delayed this year because of Hurricane Ida, correct?
Right. So kind of what we spoke about last time I was here, I think it was right after Ida, and we talked about how hard our farmers to the east and the south got hit from Ida. So basically, we're kind of seeing the first fruits of putting those seeds back in the ground after Ida, and so we'll have mustard greens, collard greens, sweet potatoes, corn, all kinds of leafy greens, satsumas. And so we're really excited that it's all working out for us timing-wise, that here for the anniversary, we're finally going to have most of our farmers returning, and we'll actually have some full tables with some beautiful produce tomorrow.
And you mentioned John Gray. He's about as good as they come, and he will be performing very early tomorrow. You get started, what, before 8 o'clock?
We get started just before 8, officially 8, but we usually ring our opening bell a few minutes early because we have lots of eager early bird shoppers that are there every week that are waiting to shop. So we do have a policy that you can't shop before the market bell rings. So.
Will there be a harvest blessing?
There'll be a harvest blessing. So one of our original members from that very first market in 1996, many people know him as the Tea Cake Man, Reverend Dillard. He will open the market up with a harvest blessing. And so we still have a lot of our original guys from that very first market, which is pretty neat.
Well, 25 years goes by in a flash for those of us who've lived a couple of them. And this is, I think this will be around for 50 years or more. But I can't imagine our city without it now.
Well, you know, I'm a little biased, but I always think that the farmers market is really the heart of any great city. And anybody who's ever been down there on Saturday, you can see that in person. In fact, your previous guest, as I was just telling you, Hiller Moore, is there every Saturday. He's one of those early birds that's there. So if you've never been, I just really encourage people to come out tomorrow, 8 to 12, 5th and Main Streets. But if you've never been, it's really a wonderful experience to get to connect with the person that grew your food.
And Hiller Moore is a gardener of renown, and it is amazing the kinds of people who get into this. But even people who are not foodies or gardeners, it's a festive atmosphere. And a listener asks about something that you're involved with. It's called the Red Stick Sprouts Booth. What's this?
So we have a program. It's one of our outreach programs for Bretta, which is the nonprofit, and kids ages 2 to 12, they can stop by our tent and sign up. It's sponsored by Baton Rouge Clinic, and kids get $2 in little wooden tokens each time they visit the market, and they get to go spend them themselves. So it's a way for us to really encourage and empower kids to make healthy food choices.
How's your group doing?
Well, we're doing great, and actually, I'd be remiss to say tomorrow's actually the kickoff of Bretta's annual fund drive, which I know y'all just wrapped up at WRKF, and we had some of the WRKF guys there a few weeks ago, but we're kicking off our annual fund drive tomorrow, so we'll have a table with some of our board members, and you can learn more about, say, the Red Stick Sprouts and some of the other outreach programs that Bretta does outside of the Red Stick Farmers Market. That is our crown jewel, but there's a lot of things people don't realize, and so we'll have some fun. I support Bretta, pins.
Yeah, well, here's a question from Shannon.
Okay.
Downtown, asking, what does BREADA stand for? What's that acronym?
Big River Economic and Agricultural Development Alliance. We got you there. Everybody thinks it's Baton Rouge.
But it's Big River.
The Big River is really...
Which Big River are we talking about?
Well, the Mississippi, and that is to really signify Bretta's statewide impact, because we serve farmers from all over the state. And so that name originally was Baton Rouge, but it was changed many years ago because we wanted to signify that it's not just the impact in Baton Rouge. It's all these farmers that are coming in from rural areas around the state and able to make a sustainable living.
And you can go to BREADA.com. .org, excuse me. Find out much more about tomorrow and all year long. Thank you, Darlene Rowland. Congratulations on 25 years. For Alondra Villarreal, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting.